Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our little Bible hour. Why is the world in such a mess? I Googled pictures. One of the things I'm going to talk about is some reasons why I think the world is a mess and some examples for it. And one of them is war. And I just Googled, war images, and this is one of them. People get displaced, if not just downright killed and shot in a war, and life is uncertain, to say the least, for people who suffer from this stuff. So let's start. And I'm not going to go through the whole history of wars, you'll be pleased to know, for example, but I thought we might want to have a look at some of the things. In the blurb, I'm sure you all check your Facebook feeds, and the sort of advert blurb for this talk this evening was, well, you know, the war to end all wars. Well, that didn't quite happen, did it? But maybe we want to just quickly have a think about. So the Great War, as it was called at some stage, we still call it that in a way, World War I to others. So it was called the war to end all wars because of the unprecedented destructiveness and death toll. And I first Googled it and I thought, 30 million dead. And then I had to revise that. Oh, no. It's only a maximum of 24 million dead. And the other 6 million were people who were only injured or otherwise hurt. 24 million dead in a war. And that's not just the people who died as soldiers, obviously. Nearly half of these people were civilians. Sort of related to the war, how they died, and actually also war related in a way, because about a third of the soldiers who died, an estimate says, probably died of the Spanish flu while they were in prisoner of war camps, because once a flu sort of loves spreading in a closed up group of people. So here we are. If you didn't die by some bullets, you might have well just died of a flu at the end of it all, just as you thought you'd escaped it. How terrible. So what was the cause of this war? Any guesses? It's still being debated today, I'd say, by historians.
Yeah, somebody shot.
Yeah, so the direct thing is somebody actually shot an actual person, and that sort of kicked it all off. But there were, like, you know, underlying circumstances were there already. What some people could say that, well, it was a family conflict carried out on a global scale, in a way. The British royal family was directly related to at least the Russian and the Prussian royal families. They were all cousins, and they were fighting out who was maybe the best part of the family or something along those lines. Maybe that certainly played into it as well. World domination, you know, it was a time of empires. The British Empire was the largest empire at the time, and others were vying for their own glory, however they might describe that. So what have we learned from this war? The Great War is possibly one of the worst ones for a lessons learned review. It took just 21 years before the next major war, World War II, would break out. And anyone in power then, in World War II breaking out, had a living memory of the horrors of war and still chose to go to war. Madness. So instead we now have endless wars, in a way. So World War II, we thought World War I was bad enough. World War II estimates 60 to 70 million deaths. And there's and currently, you know, why end at World War II? Currently, there are 56 active conflicts globally. This, according to the website I looked at, is the highest since World War II. There's two images I always associate with, well, maybe not necessarily, especially with World War II, but with war in general. And one of them you'll definitely recognize, I guess, is the Cenotaph in London, where on Remembrance Sunday, the monarch lays a wreath and the fallen are remembered. And it reads, to the glorious dead. The other one, on the left, is a nook in the main church in Esslingen. It's actually a commemoration for those fallen in the 1870 to 71 war. And it reads, Fearless and Faithful, which is the Baden-Württemberg motto. Awesome. But someone added a sobering third adjective when they wrote, and dead. You can't bring someone back from the dead. It's permanent. And those who die in wars as soldiers are usually very young men. What a terrible waste of life. So everyone is appalled by the terrible cost of war, but what do we do about it? Clearly we're not stopping them. Yeah? We are continuing this madness and this terribleness, this mess. Yeah? Maybe some wars are started by trying to resolve some mess. You tell me if any ones of those actually worked really well. And what do you do when you don't get on with your cousin? How many deaths does this cause? You know, have you tried talking to them lately, maybe, instead? And what is it with world domination? There's other topics that add to the mess in this world. And seeing as we're here in Reading, I thought we'd need to bring up the climate stripes. It's a Reading topic, after all. These stripes were designed by somebody who goes to Reading University, like some professor, don't ask me the name, didn't write it down. Anyway, so these are Reading-related stripes. These show the deviation from annual average temperature from 1850 till 2024. And so the darker blue it goes, the colder it is from average temperature per year, and the darker red it goes, the hotter it is on average. Compared to the average temperature of any old year. So the debate is raging whether climate change is man-made or not, or is that just bad weather? The stripes show the deviation, as I said, from the average and for Reading. There certainly have been colder years as well as hotter years, but you have to go back to the 1970s-ish since the last cold year. Since then, as a rule, the average has been creeping up. And maybe this is a pretty way of having a look at this. Personally, I think maybe a graph that shows you the actual change might be even better or more easily understood. So this is another way of visualizing similar data. This is not Reading specific now. This is worldwide, global, as it says. And I don't think NASA have an agenda other than making sure they can fire rockets into orbit and beyond to be looking at temperatures and weather patterns. So I'm not sure that they're, green raving loonies who want to show how we're all terrible people. They're just showing this is the temperature development over the last over 100 years. That's just what's going on. So I wonder how long this data will stay publicly accessible, as the current US government seems less keen on this topic being discussed in such a way. So it's a question, are these all outliers, or is there a trend we can see? I don't know. This looks to me like a trend. This is not just 5 years, it's not just 2 years, it's 100 years. 100 years of data should allow us to make some general conclusions. Whatever you think, why the temperatures are rising, seems difficult to deny that they actually are rising. So what are some of the consequences? Glaciers melt, if you're a keen skier, no good news. But maybe not just for skiers, right? The glaciers have a bit of a battery for water. It stores battery over winter, and then in spring it releases water again. Because the water is constantly released, the sea levels rise. Air becomes more humid, which apparently has an impact on weather patterns. So we've just come out of the wettest winter, or maybe we're still in it this afternoon, for southern and central England. And check your friendly Cornish person to understand what the flooding looked like this winter in Cornwall. Sounds like it was quite a nasty winter. Maybe not everywhere, but in general, in the southwest, it was wet. Resing as such, actually wasn't very affected, I don't think. Some roads were flooded. That seems to have been it. But it's also odd, isn't it? Because last summer was one of the hottest on record. So more extreme is what's being said here. That's what the weather's doing. The US, by the way, is currently bracing for a potential summer heat wave in March. Don't know if it'll reach Vegas. We'll let Ben tell us when he comes back. But the weather has always been a good topic for a conversation in the UK. And maybe this topic will now spread to more and more countries where the weather's just so unpredictable that you just don't know what you're going to get the next day. Who's to blame? Why would God allow to have this happen? Well, it sort of depends on where you put your assumptions in this. How much of this change is man-made or man-influenced? And what are we doing about it? There certainly have always been extreme weather situations. In our world of big data analysis, we should be able to work out if there is a correlation to our actions, or if there are maybe places to not build houses. I'm looking at you, floodplains. And for us to simply act accordingly. Well, if this is what's happening, what are we doing about it? Another place for the mess that our world is in is social media and echo chambers we find within the media spaces that we move around in. And added to that, AI sort of as an overlay on top of all of that. To some, social media is how news is received nowadays. And I don't know if you still receive a newspaper at home. I grew up in a household where we got a newspaper every day, and that's how we understood how the world was working and happening out there, plus telly, obviously, in the evenings. That was the source of truth, in a way. Was it always true? Well, maybe not, but we all sort of had the same understanding of reality, in a way, by digesting the same news in the same way. And now that's not the case anymore. In social media, you can follow influencers and voices that you think you trust. And when they post something, this is then often reinforced by people who like the post or repost it to their own followers. And who does the fact-checking here? How can we trust them? AI has the air of an instance that can and maybe should be well-informed because it has ingested vast amounts of data, which we could never ourselves, but it can then present this data in a way that we can understand. That's a great idea in principle, absolutely, and there is a use for it, obviously. But AI has been found to hallucinate or make things up that can be untrue. But in the world of social media, speed beats accuracy. Yeah? The sooner you get something out, the better, and let the facts be checked by other people. That's not my concern, or not my immediate concern, at least. Our ability to communicate is linked to our ability to live in a community of people. If we lose the ability to deal well with wrong information or differing opinions, this may well lead to a further breakup of community and society. And so we all interact with our phones rather than with each other, then actually we all lose. So how can God let this happen? So in Australia, they're currently experimenting with a ban on social media for children under the age of 16. I don't even know if social media platforms have sued them yet or not, but I'd assume that they will at some stage or try to. Taking away rights and capabilities will never be popular. Yeah? I just have to ask my boys for that one. But there is an issue here that needs to be handled and with care. Social media is a difficult space. And so the two images here, I think this is last year. Stuff like this keeps happening all the time. And Elon Musk is a terrible example for somebody who takes something that's misinformation and then spreads it to his, I don't know how many millions of followers, you know, because people want to hear what Elon Musk has to say. He's a successful person with a lot of influence in this world, richest person on the planet. If he says something, there's weight behind it, right? But sadly, the weight doesn't always get put where truth is. Yeah? That's one of the issues around social media. And so the Metropolitan Police comes out and maybe tries to calm things down and says, please, before you spread something, think carefully what you're doing and how you're spreading it. I just thought I'd add that to bring it down a notch, because we can all relate to it. You've driven through a few on the way here probably this evening. And it's something that we can all moan about without feeling like the end of the world is nigh immediately. Although any cyclist or bike rider out there would tell you that potholes can indeed be a very serious problem. And for your car's suspension, it might also not be good news. Point is, the councils are running out of money. They've already declared bankruptcy, several of them, and others may well follow. Quick fix pothole fillings, as we know, only last a few months, maybe years, if you're lucky. But we all would also hate it if the road was completely closed to resurface it properly. Plus, where's the money coming from to do this? I don't know what the councils can do here to get it right. But the roads are just one of the symptoms that we can see. Water pipes, gas mains, hospitals, schools. All of these are things we pay for with our council tax or utility bills. But somehow the infrastructure maintenance is being pushed into the future. So what am I saying? Governing and running a country is hard work, and someone is always sure they need funds more than someone else. And so making that decision as to where to put your money that is ever shrinking is really difficult. So the world's in a mess. So what? It's probably left you a little bit depressed, but I hope it hasn't left you too depressed. You probably already knew or thought that the world was a little bit messed up before I reminded you of it again. And maybe you sometimes wish someone did something radical, like lock up all the bad people or something along those lines. Well, that's sort of been done before, hasn't it? Genesis 6, verses 5 to 8, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of their thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is a reminder that all the way back in the times of Noah, this did happen. Yeah? The bad people were wiped out. We might sometimes want to blame God for letting all this happen, but this is a reminder that if God punished wickedness, the kind that leads to people fighting wars, the kind that makes us write nasty things on social media, the kind that lets us disregard the consequences for our own actions for short-term enjoyment, then he has done that in the past. God wiped out humanity, except for Noah's family. Is this what we want God to do today? Also, humanity learned their lesson, surely, and went forth to not sin again, right? No, of course not. The Bible is full of situations like this one. And we can be kind of all right in our own eyes. And I guess that's what happened in Noah's times, and that's what happened in the times of the judges. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And I think that's at the heart of What's wrong with this world? We have free will. We can determine for ourselves what we think is right and wrong. Finding our own set of values and rules to live by might work for some, but our own understanding and appreciation of a situation might just not be good enough to start making judgments. We all have hindsight moments where we realize that we've done something we later regret. But by then it's already done. It can't be taken back again. Everyone living by their own rules sounds like a recipe for the one with the least rules being able to get whatever and get away with whatever they think they'd like to do. It's a recipe for disaster. We live in a world where individual freedoms are highly valued, but individual responsibility is often shied away from. So the Bible seems to make the point that we are not very good at judging for ourselves what is right and what is wrong. We're biased in our very own favor. And so who are our role models for determining what is right and wrong? So there is hope. Just as in the times of Noah, God doesn't leave us humans to our own misery. He offers hope and he gives us a path to a better place. Noah's story, well, the flood story certainly concludes with this. Noah, once he'd got out of the ark again, built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelt the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Genesis 8. This is what God said. And it's good to note both points he makes here. He promises to never again curse the ground because of man. Promises that the seasons as we know them will continue. No more flood. He's not going to wipe us away from the face of the earth. He also clearly says that the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. We all like to think of ourselves as good, and in our own eyes we may well be. But God has a better perspective on us and also on our actions. And when he tells us that our intentions are evil, maybe we need to listen up. Maybe we need to find ways of curtailing our actions. Intentions alone are not yet a problem. But when they grow into actions, that is when the evil isn't just in our mind, but it spills out into the real world. James writes in his letter, James chapter 1, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire, his own intentions. Then desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. What starts with an intention can end up with death, as James put it. The intention needs to be checked as soon as possible. Then we have the chance of stopping us before we act in our stupidity. Yes, Jeff, I hear you say, all nice. But I can't just sit here and suppress my bad thoughts. Give me something I can do that is positive. That's the right spirit. Maybe it's a good idea to start thinking about what it is that I can and can't do. And there are a few things we can do. I guess most of you know this. The serenity prayer, God give me the grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. There will be things in our lives that we cannot influence. Trying to do so will frustrate us and waste time and energy and make us bitter. But some things in our lives can be changed, and maybe ought to. Putting our energy into doing so could be a good idea. So this prayer then makes the point that it's only by the grace of God that we can be sure to make the distinction between the two. If it is God who can help us appreciate the difference, then this prayer is also encouraging us to look to God for guidance. In a world of influences, we do well to have God as our guide. As Proverbs 3 verses 5 to 8 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones." Putting trust in God should help us achieve this serenity. In a world of chaos, in a messy world, this serenity can be our oasis of calm. When the world seems to want to swallow us alive, this calmness of knowing that God is the one who can make straight our paths, that's a precious thought to hold. But Jeff, bad things could still happen. It's true. But our perspective on them can shift. Our ability maybe to see beyond the froth, the noise of our current situation, and to see into a future that God has promised. This is what can give us strength to go forth and do battle. Battle to retain our sanity. Battle to share some of the goodness and the hope we can find in God's promises. So this is it really, isn't it? This is the genius of Jesus, who we've sort of come around to by having a look at several parts of the Bible. Jesus was the serene one in a world of noise and mess. He did overcome evil with good. He didn't give in to any base instincts that he might have had. Jesus instructed us to carry out his message to all those who would want to still hear it. And that's why we proclaim the good news, because Jesus asked us to do it, and we gladly do so. And Jesus tells us that God so loved the world that he gave him, he gave Jesus. And he loves it in such a way that he does not turn his back on it. It's a messy world. We can't shy away from the mess. But the way we walk through the mess maybe is the only thing we can determine. So he is calling all of us to let ourselves be transformed by his word and by his spirit. And so if God loves the world, then maybe we should also show this love by being a positive force in the lives of those we meet. And that's a tough challenge, of course it is. But there is no other way, really. So Jesus had this challenge in front of him, and he took it on, and he overcame where all others would have failed. And in Jesus, we have also the ability to overcome. So Jesus did this, and he asks us for one thing: follow me. He did it to show the world that he was willing and ready to listen to God and to do his will. And Jesus has gone ahead and prepared the way. And so he invites all of us also to come and follow him.